Theater kids, young and old, it's me, your Broadway buddy Ben Cameron, back with a brand spanking new episode of The Broadway Cast. All right, getting straight to the point today. Phantom of the Opera. I would not be living a life in the theater if it wasn't for Phantom of the Opera. Period. My love affair, nay, obsession, with Phantom of the Opera began pretty early. I think I was 9 years old when I first heard that iconic organ music. Dun, 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 dun. It's in your head now, too, isn't it? Now, at the risk of dating myself, I had the two cassette tape cast recording. I upgraded then to the two CD set. Ask your parents, kids, if you don't know what a CD is. And I would sit for hours and hours and listen to this recording. My imagination worked overtime, filling in the gaps between songs. I actually eventually wrote a letter to the address that was in my CD liner notes where you could request a libretto. They sent it to me. I got it, and I immediately ripped it open, following along with every word. Let's be honest, some of them I had gotten tragically wrong in my own mind. I daydreamed about taking voice lessons from Sarah Brightman, and I dreamed of what it would be like to play the Phantom. I was real quick to cut down any theater friend of mine who dared to profess that they liked Phantom more than me. Ha ha! I even read the Gaston Leroux novel and watched the classic silent film. Now, after years of nagging my mom, my family took a trip to L.A. for vacation and mostly to see Phantom at the Amundsen Theater. It blew my friggin' baby gay brain wide open. I got the souvenir program. I got the T-shirt. I wore that T-shirt for my junior high school yearbook photo. I even donned a full Phantom of the Opera costume and created a performance art piece in lieu of a student body election speech. There's a whole story. Maybe I'll put it on the Patreon if you join us and tell you all about that. I've seen Phantom on Broadway a few times. In fact, I just remember the other day I was at the 10-year anniversary performance of the show when I first moved to New York City. All right, you get it. Phantom is very near and dear to my heart, as it is to yours. That's why today is so exciting. I've gathered together not one, not two, but three real-life, honest-to-goodness Phantoms to take us deep into the catacombs and break down this iconic character. We've got living legend Howard McGillen. Yes, Howard McGillen. The current West End Phantom, Killian Donnelly, who spoke to us directly from his makeup chair pre-show. How cool is that? And my good pal and often confused for friend, Ben Crawford, who is Broadway's current and possibly final Phantom, as the show will be closing in January. So put on a mask, put on a cape, and get ready for the men behind the music of the night. Before I introduce them to you, I want to remind you to subscribe to the show, rate and review, like us on all of our platforms, share us with your friends. And make sure that you support us on Patreon. You can become a Patreon supporter and get exclusive content that is made strictly and only for you and nobody else. You can find the link in the liner notes, so be sure to support us there. All right, my friends, let's go on with the show.
All right, I'm going to try not to straight up poop my pants because this is maybe as thrilled as I've ever been to talk to three actors in my entire life. Phantom of the Opera has been running through my veins as a fan, P-H-A-N, my entire life, as I mentioned. But here we have three actual Phantoms, not just dream Phantoms, here with us. We've got the legendary, the icon, Howard McGillen here with us. Hi, Howard.
Hey, hi, Ben.
Howard, you have the distinction of, do you know the number of how many times you've played this role?
They tell me 2544.
That is outrageous.
It's insane, and it's a sign of my mental instability, but I did it for, I did it for 2544 performances at the Majestic Theater on Broadway.
That is absolutely, well, you must be doing something right. They wanted to keep you around.
I guess.
Wow. I'm fairly certain I've seen you in the role. And I have a Phantom of the Opera poster, big surprise, in my kitchen that you may have signed. I'll have to look at that. Also with us today, currently on the boards on Big Broadway, Ben Crawford is the Phantom of the Opera. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Ben. How you doing? Wonderful name you've got there.
You've got a beautiful name. If I had a time for every time somebody's asked me how my run in Phantom is going and say, oh yeah, Ben Crawford, aren't you the Phantom guy? And I'm like, not since eighth grade.
But you were really good in eighth grade.
Well, we'll find out about that. I got to tell you, one of the great joys for my inner child was coming to see you at the show and getting to come backstage and put the actual mask on my face. And we'll put a photo of that in our Facebook.
Yes, page. Yes, yes. That was awesome. But
my inner child wept openly. And once again, there may have been some inner child pooping on that one. So thanks for making that dream come true.
My pleasure.
Yeah. And from the UK, currently starring as the Phantom, Killian Donnelly is here from his dressing room in London right now in real time. Hi, Killian.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me on. Yes, coming to you live from Her Majesty's Theatre in the dressing room.
That's so very, very cool. And you're going to be getting ready in just a little bit to take the stage tonight. So we've got to get Killian into that chair. Before we begin, I want to ask, how have your lives, if they have, intersected?
And they...
Is this it?
Well, this is the first time Killian, this is Howard speaking now. The first time Killian and I have met electronically, albeit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Ben and I have met several times over the years at different Phantom events over the past couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. Howard and I have done some stuff together. And Killian and I have interacted on social media, but we've never had a chance to like sit down and talk. So this is really cool.
It's a fun...
No. Yeah, it's always that thing as well. As soon as you get the role, you feel like you're immediately in a brotherhood. And it's always that people reach out and you don't realize how... You realize how iconic the role is. There's about 10 Phantoms going on in the world media. You're able to converse and connect. That's what I love about it.
And I feel like there's got to be some common ground that can only be found with other actors who've taken on this role. It's such a giant, iconic role. Before we really dive into this character deep dive, I'm a complete crazy person and I like to warm us up with a little bit of game. So this is, Ben Crawford, you're going to really love me by the end of this. So I'm going to task Howard and Killian. I'm going to ask you to give me some words, if you'd be so kind. I'll instruct you as to what kind of words I'd like you to get. And Amelia will be taking some notes. So Howard, if you could please give me a noun.
Okay. Dog.
Dog, wonderful. Killian, can you also give me a noun?
Cat.
Oh, this is going to be real good. And I need a third noun, Howard.
Lamp.
Wonderful. Killian, an adverb?
Quick.
Quick, oh, we'll go with quickly.
Quickly, sorry. I thought you said verb, sorry.
Oh, yeah, an adverb. And then we need another noun.
Oh, from me?
Or for anyone who wants to throw out a noun.
Television.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. All right, we need another adverb.
Slowly.
I can quickly jump in. I did not get that second noun.
The second noun? Oh, I think that it was cat. Great, 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 great. We said, what was the adverb that we got there?
Slowly.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Another noun?
Table.
Wonderful, wonderful. And finally, an adjective.
Wooden.
Wooden.
Oh my God, why can't I think of an adjective?
Wooden is wonderful. Yeah. I love that. All right, we'll just stop right there. So what we've... Thank you for your input, gentlemen. What we will now put Mr. Ben Crawford through is our Phantom musical Mad Lib moment. So we're going to ask Emilio to pull up the screen, and we've got some new lyrics for everyone's favorite song, Music of the Night. That you, once again, we're not asking for a full voice sing, Ben. We know you've got stuff to do, but let's just out. Phantom to Phantom. There we go. Oh, all wonderful. Right. Ben, whenever you're ready.
All right. Nighttime sharpens, heightens each dog, cat stirs and wakes lamp. Quickly the senses abandon their television.
Bravo's nice there. That's very, very good.
Thank you. Should I keep going?
Sure, sure, sure. Just two more lines, yeah.
Slowly, slowly, night unfurls its table. Uh-huh. Grasp it, wooden, it tremulous and blessed.
And that's it. That's all we needed. They're very, beautiful. Very good. Thank you so much, Ben. That was inspiring. In absolutely no way.
You know, if I sing those tonight, it's your fault.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine? They're like, we had no idea cats and dogs were involved in this. Right. My God.
I'd be like, where's the table? Where's the table, guys?
Yeah, but you won't forget slowly.
No, it's going to be
really
slowly.
Slow.
No, guys, slowly.
Slowly.
Yes.
He really, really means it. I like to get to know a little bit about how you all got bit by the theater bug, where you come from, and what was kind of the first show you saw and maybe subsequently the first experiences you had in the theater, maybe as a child, maybe this was in college. When did the bug bite you, Killian?
My father gave me Colin Wilkinson Sings the Musical Hits when I was about 11 years old. Absolutely. I used to always say my father didn't know good music. He used to listen, but I was 11 years old and didn't really know. And then he said, you want to hear a voice? Here's a voice. And I put on track 7, which was Music of the Night, and then track 8 was Bring Him Home. And I just remember hearing that voice. And that was a moment for me of, wow, people are allowed to sing like this. You can sing like this and you can sing text. I was hearing text for the first time rather than just notes. And yeah, he told me it was a show called Phantom of the Opera. He told me it was a show called Les Miserables. But the first show I ever saw was probably that year. And it was in my local, I guess you guys call it community theater. It was my local amateur dramatics. And it was JCS, it was Jesus Christ Superstar. And that's when I just fell in love with musical theater. And I went, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do. How do I do that? Where do I go? Who do I listen to? Tell me everything I have to do. So yeah, it was quite a wonderful journey.
Did you become very active in your community theater at that point? Did you get yourself
I wasn't allowed because I was too young. You had to be 16 and I was 11 at the time. So I actually just... There's a game called a sport called hurling over here in Ireland. And you have to, like, where I grew up, everyone played hurling, but I was into musical theater. So I kind of loved it because in my small little village of Kilmessan, you were kind of looked at, there's something wrong with that kid. He's not into hurling. He's into, what is it? The Phantom of the Opera and Les Miserables. Like, yep, he's into musical theater. So I found this Amdram Society, but I was only allowed to join when I was 15. So I spent 4 years just waiting for that moment, and then got into Oliver was the first show we did, and then the next year you do Oklahoma, and it's that thing where your confidence builds and you make the friends you're gonna have for the rest of your life, and your voice builds. But then when I got into the professional end of it, suddenly it was like you're not just performing for a weekend, you're performing 8 shows a week for 12 months, and that's when it all started getting a bit serious. Fell in love. And I think that's the thing where I know I 100% forget sometimes that when I'm cracking out into me in the grocery store that I'm not performing to the best of my ability on that stage. And you actually forget that there's someone in that audience who has had that ticket for 6 months.
Yeah.
And they are a Killian Donnelly aged 10 or 11 about to have their bug moment, so that in 20 years time, Ben Cameron asks them the same question. So there's lovely moments like that where I'm brought back to reality of this is why we do it, and a full circle of why I started.
Oh, absolutely. I love that you had 4 years to ruminate on Les Mis, and as a preteen to just let that build up inside of you. Howard McGillin, how'd you get into this fray?
Well, I guess the first musical I ever saw was The Sound of Music in my local high school production. And actually my brother, who was a senior in the senior class that year, played Captain Von Trapp. I was in the orchestra playing the clarinet.
Oh.
And I had never seen a Broadway musical. I'd never seen a musical before. And I'm watching my brother up there on the stage having a great old time. And I thought, this looks like a lot of fun. So I auditioned for the show the next year, which was one of Lerner and Lowe's minor flops called Paint Your Wagon.
Oh, sure.
And I played the epic role of Johansson the Swede, who had the memorable line, "Tink I look for better ground." And that was my start.
Oh my God. The accent. But I was thrilled. Too.
Yeah. Oh, the accent.
No, sure. Yeah.
Oh, I was really good with that Swede line. Yeah, that one line.
You know, sometimes I feel like as an actor, when you have very few lines, maybe in a show, it gets even more stressful because you really build up and put a lot of pressure on that one guy that you got to knock out of the park.
Of course. Of course. Mind.
And then it was just, it stuck forever then, huh?
It totally stuck. The bug had bit me. And, you know, I just started doing every show I could possibly get into in local. I love Amdram, Killian. That's great. I'd never heard that expression before. That's good. All the community theater I could get into and local, you know, high school shows and that's kind of how I got bitten by the bug and it didn't let go.
Was there a moment, Howard, that you kind of realized, oh wait, I can really, really sing?
Well, yeah, I guess it was when I was then in my senior year in high school and I was cast in She Loves Me. We did a production of She Loves Me. Little did I know I was going to be in the revival at the Roundabout Theater on Broadway years later. But the director had this crazy notion of double casting the entire show. So, because he had so many kids in the theater department, and I auditioned, and he cast me on alternate nights as George, the love interest, and Kodai, the cad, on the other nights. And it was, I mean, I thought, well, you know, if I can do these two roles, maybe there's a chance for me somewhere else, you know, in some other show. So that's kind of how I started to gain confidence with that.
Yeah. Mr. Crawford, how about you?
I mean, I don't know. I was a weird kid growing up, and then I got into high school, and I remember going probably actually in like seventh or eighth grade. My dad played orchestra. He played in the orchestra of another high school and saw a production of Carousel and a production of The Crucible. And I remember just being like really affected by it. And then getting into high school, and I did marching band. And then my junior year, I did marching band and choir, and we did a musical every year. And we did Anything Goes, and I was Moonface Martin, and I got to be like my weird, silly self. And people, you know, I were very positive about the performance. So that was great. And then senior year, we did Fiddler on the Roof. I quit marching band and I was just doing choir. And I was very age appropriately cast as Tevye.
Sure.
Yeah. I wore a sweet beard that had cold cream in it to make it look gray, you know, like we did, you know, like you do in high school drama. And that really affected
spirit
me.
Spirit gum involved.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to talk about it. yes, a lot of spirit gum was involved. Yeah. And just like, you know, that burning red, but you're like, it's for the art, it's for the craft. So did that. And then I thought, well, I'm going to put this away now. I'm going to go be a doctor. So I quit that. I started pre-med in college, and I was with a girl at the time, and I thought like this was going to be our thing. And then we broke up, and I was like, maybe I want to do something different. So I went over to the theater department and started on the BA track and did that for a semester. And then I auditioned the next year to like get into the BFA program for the musical theater program at University of Arizona. And they liked what they saw. And I started there and really started to, you know, enjoy what I was doing. Didn't really know what I was doing until my junior year and was like, oh, this is how I'm gonna pay bills and stuff. But yeah, it took a little while to have that like click in my head, but I was enjoying it and I had a great time and I'm very grateful for my time there.
And you're still having a great time with it.
I can't really complain. So it's
pretty good stuff. I feel like it doesn't really get, I can't imagine it gets much better than this role. I think in the canon of musical theater, this is kind of the bullseye of any role for a male actor. Do you remember the first time you saw Phantom of the Opera?
Yeah, I saw it, Hugh was playing the Phantom. And I saw it because I was actually auditioning for one of the managers. I was way too young, but was very lucky. I was very happy to have the opportunity. But I remember going in and watching the show and remembering that made me remember when I was younger and my grandparents took a road trip with their friends to LA to go see Michael Crawford play the role when I was younger. And then they saw the show and it toured to Tucson where I'm from. And they told me about the Chandelier Falls. And I just remember like that all started like flooding back to me. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is that, you know? That was when I saw it for the first time. And then, you know, having the opportunity, you know, some years later, it was like, oh wow. Okay. All right. And, you know, I had to kind of wrap my head around it.
Yeah, well, was it something as you watched that for the first time and saw Crawford do it, did you think, I would love to play that role?
I didn't think I could, to be honest. I was like, oh, that's really high. He sings really high. And then, you know, and then I think the opportunity fell in my lap and I was like, well, you better figure it out kind of thing, you know? So that's kind of how it kind of blossomed. And yeah, I never thought I'd be able to do it until I got asked to come in and audition for it.
Like, oh, I guess this is who I am now.
Yeah. You know, it's that thing of like, you know what you can do, but then sometimes it's nice to have other people be like, we think you can do this. And you go, oh, well, if you think I can do this, then let's try. Yeah.
Yeah. Killian, did it live up to your expectations after it had boiled inside of you listening to Cole Wilkinson sing The Phantom? Did you?
Yeah.
Was it what you thought it would be?
Yeah. I remember my friend Ronan went to see a touring production in Dublin when he was 15 years old, and he came back to me and he said, I've just seen The Phantom of the Opera. And I went, oh, I have to see this. But at the time, I wasn't able to afford to go and watch theater. So jump forward to 2010, when I've been cast as Raoul at Her Majesty's. And a week before I start rehearsals, I go, I should probably go and see this. So I went in and watched it and did that thing of trying to learn the blocking just by watching it rather than just taking it in. So I technically watched The Phantom of the Opera for the first time, but just as Ben was saying, I remember going, the chandelier is going to fall now, it's going to fall, oh no, it's not going to fall, oh wait, there, this is when it falls, oh amazing. So everything was it matched my expectations. I'll never forget, where everyone can tell you about the lair, the moment it goes into the lair, the candles, the boat, and they can all describe these things. But until you see it for the first time, and there will never be a clip online or a YouTube secretly filmed or anything like that that will match up to seeing that moment, feeling that atmosphere for the first time. It is exceptional. And probably the other guys can say this as well, but we had, my favorite thing is when kids dressed as the Phantom of the Opera are standing at stage door. Like, that is what, there are other roles out there that have those moments, your Valjeans, your Elphabas, your Eponines. But when there is a 7-year-old boy or girl and they are dressed as a Christine or Phantom and they are just standing there, and I'm going, I didn't have this when I was 7 or 8. It was there, it was available to me. And I go, do you like The Phantom? And they go, we love it. And this is my first time seeing the boat. Absolutely just adored it. That's everything. That's absolutely everything. And I hope it meets their expectations as well.
I agree. I remember I poured through the liner notes and looked at all the pictures as a kid and listened to it incessantly and imagined what it would be like to see that. And my family took a vacation to Los Angeles to see the production, and I saw Robert Guillaume play the Phantom in that production and just was bowled over by it. And I'll have you know, Killian, I was just hosting BroadwayCon here in the city, and there are not just children who are dressing up as the Phantom these days.
There
very excited adults who are still keen to put on a cape, a hat, and a mask and live out their inner truth and fantasies.
And apply their own prosthetics.
Absolutely. Thank God you don't have to do that.
Yes, thank God.
Howard, seeing Phantom for the first time, do you remember that?
I so remember that. I was doing Anything Goes at Lincoln Center with Patti LuPone, and Phantom was opening on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And I went to see a very early preview of Phantom. And it had already been such a hit in London that we knew that Phantom was the show of the year. And in fact, I'm bragging a little bit on myself, I was nominated in the same category that year for the Tony as Michael.
Yes, you were.
And I went to see Phantom and sat there and thought, there isn't a snowball's chance in hell that you're gonna win this award. It was so clear. But in a way that was actually wonderful, because it took all the pressure off. The night of the Tonys was complete joy from top to bottom, because I knew I didn't have a chance. So I was just there to enjoy the party and be happy to be invited. So, so that was my very first sighting and hearing of the show.
Did you, when you saw the show in that early preview, did you think, now that's a role I'd like to do?
I did. But you know, we were just beginning our run. So I was feeling it, you know, I mean, I think maybe I was feeling a little proprietary at that point about my role and wanting to be, you know, kind of, I guess I wasn't really thinking that seriously that Phantom was ever going to be in my, ever going to be in my field of vision. I just didn't know that it was going to happen.
Yeah. Is there anything in the audition process for Phantom of the Opera that surprised you, or any sort of hoops that you have to jump through that you're like, oh, I guess if I'm going to get this Phantom gig, I gotta pull this out.
I just remember having to sing Music of the Night a lot. Like, I think they were checking vocal stamina. I think it was like a first audition was like around like 11 or so in the morning, and sang, and they're like, can you come back at like 2:30? And I said, sure. And I came back, and then for like 2 hours, it was just like Music of the Night over and over again. And I think part, and obviously it was like, they wanted to see what I could do, but I think also it was like, can you sing this? Like, you know, and be, just like, you know, really making sure that it was something that you could, that I could do. That was the big thing I remember, and being like, they are making sure that I can actually do this. I remember that was like a big thing for me.
Yeah.
I was kind of similar. Yeah. Because they did the exact same thing where they'd have me sing Music of the Night, but then they'd get me to do The Morning After, where you're angry and crawling across the ground and being really gravelly with your voice and screaming. And then once you've gotten that out and you're like, okay, I need a drink of water, I'm glad I've done Music of the Night, then they'd go, let's just hear Music of the Night one more time. And I'm like, oh God, I have nothing left in the tank. So you'd go off and have a drink of water and go, yeah, okay. But I do remember when I go into auditions, I try and know the material as best I can, but sometimes there'll be the odd verse where I'm going, oh, is that word here? Is that word there? Or even with dialogue, will I hold the dialogue? And all these questions go through my head, and I'm approaching it wrong. Yeah. But with Music of the Night, I was confident that I was like, going, okay, I know this song. I've known it since I was 11 years old. So get that out of my head. Just perform a Phantom. Perform your Phantom, Killian. Don't try and match the movements of what you've seen others do. Just listen to the, sing the text is the best note I ever got. And there was a moment where I was on Her Majesty's stage, and I must have gotten to the sore, and then I just, there was that pause, and I went, and you live as you never, oh my God, I'm singing the Phantom of the Opera on Her Majesty's Theatre right now. That just ran through my head, and I had to tell myself, just keep going. But you forget that in the audience is Cameron and Andrew, and they're hidden gems within the blackness of the stalls, and you're just trying to put that out of your head that the two people that created this are there, and they're going to either pick you or not. And then you just finish, you feel confident, and then there's about a 5-second gap, and you just hear this little voice go, thank you, thank you very much indeed, thank you. You just walk off with what feels, with your tail between your legs, but then you get the greatest phone call ever.
It's emotionally cruel, that 5 seconds where you think, yeah, you whisper at each other, and you're like, I have no idea. And really, they're probably,
yeah, you're like, I think it's a test.
Yeah,
I Chinese think it's a front. Test. So if, yeah, and if the show stops in the middle, and they're going to go, right, what's he going to do in the 5 seconds if there's a show stop? Let's see, just hold him for 5 seconds. Let's see what he'll do. So I just stare back at them.
What was the, Howard, how about that in the audition room, being in front of Andrew and Cameron and Hal Prince?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it ever gets easy. You know, the thing about an actor, I think it's both what keeps us young, and also what, I don't know, it's a constant challenge in that you are always having to prove yourself again. It never, never stops. So yeah, I mean, I think like Killian said, I try to be as prepared as I possibly can be before I walk into the room. And then all you can do is just give forth with what you do. And the song itself is just so exquisite and so beautiful. And talk about the range it covers emotionally. It's an amazing it's like riding a gorgeous wave. If I were a surfer, and I only do this in my imagination, if I were able to do that, that would be the experience of singing something like Music of the Night. So you're aware of the presence of these great, great people out there. It's funny, Killian, I thought you mentioned the morning after scene. One of my very first rehearsals with Hal Prince was the morning after scene. And he said, and I'm dragging myself across the stage, you're singing this rather intricate piece of material, at the same time, you know, prostrate on the floor, pulling yourself across. And he said, are you uncomfortable? Good, because that's what I want. You know, the sadist in him was just there, front and center. You know,
What was he like, Howard? Because I think, I don't know, Ben, if you got to work with him, but I definitely, when I was Raoul, he would come in and do a rehearsal. He would fly over, do a rehearsal with the entire company. But I never got to take a rehearsal like that. And I've always asked, anyone who's ever met him, I've always gone, what was he like?
Well, I worked with him on three different projects. So I had, and I knew him personally. We had, over the years, we developed a friendship. I mean, I was still, you know, an actor who was invited into his presence from time to time. We got put on his Christmas party list. And every year we would go to Hal's Christmas party at his house for his tree trimming. And I mean, in the presence of this man, it was, I idolized him my entire life. And so it was great. And I will tell you that his direction in rehearsal was very specific and very clear. And I just loved him. He was an extraordinary man.
I had a couple moments with him. You know, he was at my final audition. And Seth, our head of production, he was like, are you ready? And I said, yeah. He's like, okay. He's like, oh, by the way, Hal's here. Like, just drop that on me.
My heart.
Okay. So I went in and it was him and Kristen Blodgett for my final callback. And they were filming me for Cameron and Andrew. And I remember I finished and he was like, Ben, you're terrific. That's really terrific. Thank you so much. And I had this really good feeling. And I left and I called my agent. I said, I went really well. And they said, did he say you were swell? Because that was one of his big things. It's like, he says something you're swell. And I was like, no, he said,
swell,
I was terrific.
Pal.
Yeah. And he said, I said, no, he said I was terrific. And they were like, he said terrific. Oh. And then they were like trying, it was like a cryptologist trying to like decode what terrific meant, you know? And then we, you know, and luckily I found out like, you know, I get that phone call that, you know, makes you soar to the heavens. But I always remember when he would come in for the show, we would like chat and make small talk, and then he would want to use the restroom in my dressing room. And the thing that I always loved is he would say, Ben, can I use your John? And I'd say, it's more your John than mine, Hal. And he'd always chuckle at that. So that was like this like little interaction that we had. And you know, like I remember the last time he came to the theater, and you know, it was such a, you know, devastating day for all of us when we heard of his passing. But he just, the thing too is like, he's such like a titan of Broadway, and he just felt like he was just a regular guy. Like you could just talk to him and chat, and like we would just make small talk. And I don't really remember like any of our conversations, but like he would like Howard said, he was right to the point when he wanted, you know, just he would tell you what you need to do. And he was, but you could just approach him, and he was there. There was never like a, you know, like, excuse me, can I ask? It was always just like, you know, how can I ask, you know, can I ask? And he was like, of course, you know. So I just really admired him for that, for being as successful and being this like Broadway titan and just being so approachable. I just thought that was just the coolest thing.
Seth, who Ben mentioned there, is our director now, and Seth worked with Hal for years and years and years. So we would barely get through any scene work because I'd always be asking Seth, what was Hal like? What did he do? And Seth he needs to write a book because he has the most beautiful stories on Hal. But one of the most beautiful is at the end, when Christine gives the ring back to the Phantom, that Seth would sit beside Hal in the auditorium, and Hal would just mime the hand going up. He would do it with the timing because it's all set to timing. And he would just sit in his chair, but mime it perfectly every single time he watched the show. And that for me just shows how much care and passion the director had for his show, for his baby, because people can direct and they can go away and direct it somewhere else and not give it care and passion. But when your baby is down the road and you're able to sit and watch it and you just have a such passion about it, it shows. It absolutely shows on stage. And another thing, I think Andrew said this as well, that since the first preview, this show has not changed, which I cannot get over. Of course, previews, they go, okay, we're going to cut that song. This is going into act two. But Andrew says it's the only show he's ever done where from the first preview, they went, yeah, that's it. Okay, keep it going.
Wow.
Since 1986. That's phenomenal. That doesn't happen anymore.
No, you test it never an audience. Happens. I don't think it ever happened before or since. That's just incredible.
I know of shows, Wicked in particular, where they were still tinkering with it and changing things up years into the run.
Of course.
That does speak to just how, I mean, to quote Cogsworth.
Well, there's Les Miserables. Like, Bring 'Em Home wasn't in Les Miserables until 9 weeks of previews. They were like, Valjean doesn't have a song in Act Two. And then Claude Michel went away and wrote Bring 'Em Home. But for the first preview of Phantom of the Opera to be, cut, copy and paste, see is 36 years later. It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
When you talk about being able to talk to Hal casual and he made you feel comfortable in that way, there's got to be amount of pressure when you get this role of how do I make this role mine? There's been many people to do the role there. It's iconic in so many ways. Where do you begin to say, how do I make this mine? And what will I bring to this that will be different from the other Phantoms?
Well, I was just thinking, Ben, about what you said about just about how iconic the show is and down to movement in the show. I love Killian, when you said, you know, you stop thinking about what you've seen, what kind of movement you've seen, just sing the song the way you want to. But there was so much that was iconic about the, you know, so many of the photographs and the video that we've seen over the years. And his hand has to push her chin away at this moment. And I remember when the very first rehearsal or two where I was being put into the show, and I thought, but I want to do it my way, you know, and you find with every show that I've replaced in many, many shows. So I've gone into many shows on Broadway and I love the process, but it is a little bit of finding your way, navigating your way through what you must do that has been seen by every audience since the beginning. And also, how can I find an inner life, a place that I'm coming from about who this man is and what it is that drives him, that I know is unique, that is just about my truth and whatever, you know. And each one of us, that's the amazing thing about this show and about any show, is that you can take 10 different actors and put them in that part. It's going to be different no matter what. But that's part of the joy of rehearsing and the joy of getting to do something repeatedly. You know, I love the idea, the French word for rehearsal is repetition, and the idea of it is repetition, and no one knows about repetition more than the three of us. Because we have played the role over and over. And there is something that I find challenging but also kind of delicious about being able to go out every night and find new discoveries about this person and about this play and about what makes this so brilliant.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Go ahead, Ben.
Well, no, just to add on, I mean, it is that thing where you know, we've been fortunate to do the role, you know, many times. And so you find those new things that, like, you know, change the character a bit or, you know, motivate you in a different way. And you come in, like Howard said, ready to do your own thing. And I remember, like, Seth, I had like 2 weeks of rehearsal, then a week off to go do something, then 2 weeks back. And he was like, you need to work on your hand, Music of the Night hand. He's like, you really need to work on that. And we had like an hour in rehearsal where it was just like, your hand doesn't look the right way, you know? And so I remember like that week I had where I wasn't rehearsing, I was practicing my hand and I came back and he was like, oh, someone's been practicing their hand. And I was just like, it's the silliest, like, but it has to be like a way that they, you know, it speaks the truth of the character. And then wanting to find, I mean, I was totally fine with pushing back with Seth during the rehearsal process, because I always know that he would like correct me if it was something that he didn't want to see. So there was that, like, that frustration a little bit, the artist's frustration of doing what I want to do, but like Howard said, fitting it in that box of this iconic character that you have to make sure that you're doing justice to. So it is that interesting balance of finding yourself and making sure your hand is doing the right thing.
The year that I did Raoul was the 25th year when we performed the 25th concert at the Albert Hall. So I got into the ensemble of that concert. So we were rehearsing that whilst performing Phantom at Her Majesty's. And at Her Majesty's, Cameron had four Phantoms throughout that one contract. So I would run off from the dressing room as Raoul, and the Phantom of the Opera would start, and I'd just take my jacket off and watch the Music of the Night from four different Phantoms. And I had John Owen Jones, Earl Carpenter, Ramin Karimloo, and Peter Yoback. And I remember just seeing every single one, like Howard said, every single one was completely different. But it still got the same reaction from the audience, because they sung the text, they elongated a note where they wanted to, they used vibrato, they took an extra breath there. It was all different. There was John, who was the voice, there was Earl, who was the brokenhearted, lovelorn actor. There was Ramin, who brought the rock and roller to it. And then there was Peter Yoback, who played the innocence of the child. And I could see all these little moments in each of their performances, and I've stolen all the best bits from them.
That's the sign of a good actor.
There you go. There you go.
Steal from the best.
I'll take it.
I think it was Elvis who said, if you take from a bunch of people, it's research. If you take from one, it's stealing. So I'm doing it's my research.
There you go.
Right. To that, with the character, I thought it was really interesting the way that you described each of those four Phantoms, Killian, with a different kind of anecdote, the heartbroken artist or the rock and roller. For each of you, if you had to boil it down to what's the one deep, dark, dirty secret about your Phantom that no one knows? Oh, that's so meta.
Oh, I don't know if I can say it. I think it'll ruin my performance.
Really?
Yeah, I think if you know the secrets, then I'll think about it and then I'll like ruin my performance. Like, you know, you have like those secrets as a performer that you know, they just like motivate you in the moment. I feel like if I say them, then I'm like, oh crap, now they're out, you know.
I agree with Ben there, but there's definitely been something where I've been playing some and then you go to stage door or an audience member completely didn't pick up on it but picked up on something that I didn't think I was playing. So someone has said to me, I'm really getting the inner child that you're playing. And I go, oh, I didn't think I was playing that at all. But then what I do is focus on it. And then I am literally a four-year-old child in the final layer, the next show. And that's when Seth comes up to me and he goes, pull it back. How old are you? You're like 4-year-old. And I was like, oh, no, sorry. I just got a compliment at the stage door, which was the worst thing ever.
I really blow that part of it up.
Ben, what this question reminds me of, this question reminds me of when I went into Phantom. I got a 4-page handwritten single spaced fax from Gillian Lynn all about the Phantom of the Opera and who he was. And I have to tell you, it was so sexual. Everything was, and down to the point that she was saying certain songs should be sung through certain body parts that I had to say, okay, this is deep. And I loved the imagery that she presented. I don't think some of it was anatomically possible, but I so loved the the passion that Jillian felt, and you talk about passion for something, there was no one who was more passionate about what she did than Jillian Lynn, who of course choreographed a Phantom and many other great Andrew Lloyd Webber projects. She and Hal shared that kind of passion for the art as well as the actual piece, the actual show. And anyway, that just triggered that memory for me.
For all of our listeners, it's Killian is now in the chair getting ready. We're getting the real backstage good stuff. Of course you can't see it, but we can, and I'm fascinated by it.
Ben is looking at me going, oh, okay, what have you got in the chair? Oh, you get it. Oh, you
yeah,
get
I'm
that.
Like,
okay.
I'm like, you get that? Okay, I see that. All right.
It's out of my contract. Nice. Moisturizing mist.
Excellent. I have to say, this is the one part I don't miss, Ben, is
so
the chair part, Killian.
How long was your makeup, Howard?
It was about an hour and 20, I think.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay,
how
Ben,
about you?
What are you?
I'm
an hour 15.
We're like 45 to 55, depending.
Wow.
That's sped up then.
Yeah, we're about there. I usually get in the chair like an hour before, and then we're typically done. Sometimes it also depends on like how my skin is. Like,
oh my
god,
the skin. That's a whole other chapter that we can discuss.
That's a whole all that aspect, and like when I get in the chair, because I'm supposed to get in the chair an hour before. Sometimes I don't, so it's like I come in a little late. But we're usually done. Like if we're done by like places or a little, it's fine. I mean, we just figure it out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You hear about people who are in Cats early on who are like, yeah, we were in the makeup chair for 2.5 hours. And then mm-hmm. the Cats at the end were like, I do it in 10 minutes. I slap it on and we're off to the races. What is it about the character, your Phantom, that you like the most? What do you like most about him?
I feel like he's like a supervillain, and as a kid who grew up like loving comic books and like all that kind of stuff, there's an aspect of like this old like Victorian era like supervillain, and I kind of enjoy that part. And then being a bad guy, but then trying to find the humanity in being a bad guy, or at least a misunderstood guy who people perceive as bad. I mean, he does kill people, so there is that. But yeah, it's just like finding that humanity. And enjoying the fact that has all these cool tricks. I enjoy that.
Yeah, he's the bad guy that is loved by the audience. Oh, that's yeah. The cool thing at the end. It's like it's always that shows the writing and the direction where the audience want proceed to run away with him, but you're going, but he's, as Ben says, he has killed people. He's the bad guy. It's like, yeah, but we forget all that. He just looks lovely in a mask.
I think it's amazing, Killian, that the Phantom, he is a terrorist of a sort. He kills people. He causes such terror to happen throughout the show. In fact, I was doing Phantom when 9/11 happened, and we went dark for 3 nights before we came back. And the first night back, I would say the first couple of weeks back at least, I felt so fragile. Thrusting this villain upon the audience, because the audience is supposed to be terrified too at times. The chandelier falling is only one aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
But I think that it speaks, as you said, Killian, to the writing, that this guy, I think that one of the things that I loved most about him was playing the fact that he was so incapable of expressing the love that he felt for Christine, but that down deep, that was what motivated him, was that love. So I tried to, as best I could, to somehow remember that was what motivated him at all moments, was it that it was a boundless love that he had no sense of how to control. And clearly, because of his damaged past, he's not he acts in exactly the wrong way, almost without question, without fail. But I do believe that's why audiences keep coming back. It's not just the glorious score that Andrew wrote. It's not just Maria Bjornson's fantastic set. You were talking about that earlier, Killian, of the chandeliers coming up through the mist as we go down to the lair. The beauty that woman created in the palette that she created from was just so extraordinary.
Yeah.
But there's more to this show that makes people keep coming back, and it is, I think, they're wanting him to finally be able to express his love in the way that we want him to be capable of. I don't know that he's ever capable of it, but
what is it? What's the moment that thrills you the most in the show? What's your favorite moment to perform for everybody?
I'll say the final layer. The final layer for me is a beautiful, therapeutic scene. Something can happen to me throughout the day and I will just ball up that frustration. And I am so grateful that I have the final layer to go to at the end of my day, that I can just pour out that emotion. Theater is therapy for me and for audiences as well. And I just pour every bit of emotion, because he goes through anger, love, heartbreak, torment, all in the space of 8-9 minute scene. Before that, all he's doing is standing there and looking great and going, yes, I'm the Phantom, I'm the one they're all talking about, aren't I great, look at my pyros, look at me. But then he is just so exposed at the end, and that's when you need to act, and that's when you need to vocally perform to the best of your ability. And it's so fulfilling, and I'm extremely grateful, because you can play roles and you're like, oh, I love that song, oh, here's that bit, but that's the end, that's the juicy bit, and it's right at the end. And yeah, I feel extremely grateful to have that personally in my life, so that I can just pour emotion out, because there's only one way to do it, and that's full out.
Yeah, how about you, gentlemen?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Killian. It's kind of the final piece of the puzzle, you know. Yeah. And it's like, you, everything you've done in the show pays off in that scene, you know. If you're gonna have the audience, you know, feel something, at least from my perspective, it's that scene where they realize that's the most human, I think, that he shows, the humanity he shows, mm-hmm. in that scene. So it's it just is that big opportunity to kind of justify everything in a sense. So you know, when you get to the end and sing the "You Alone" and finish the like, you've kind of put a dot at the end of like your performance, and you've kind of like wrapped it with a bow, and like that was it. So I feel like it's just so pivotal. It's like the keystone, but it's like at the end of the show. It's you know, it's why it's still running for so long, is that everything gets all finished up, you know.
I think I just ditto everything that I'm sorry.
I was going to ask, is that vocally the most thrilling part to sing? Is there at the end?
No question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just kind of, yeah. Like I said, you just like, it all comes together there. It's like, all, you know, watching her go away.
Howard, you're about to say something.
Well, I was going to say, well, what you just said, I was making me think about what's the most thrilling part of the score to sing. Certainly Music of the Night is beautiful. And as I said, emotionally covers such range, but in a way it's his kind of explanation of who he is and why he loves music and why music moves him more than anything, and that, and why he wants Christine to come with him. But by the final layer and the final 10 minutes of the show, 15 minutes of the show, it is, as Killian said, the most exposed any human being could ever be. You know, talk about unmasked. He's finally ripped, everything has been torn off of his, you know, everything he's hiding behind has finally been taken from him. And you see him so exposed and so fragile and so just on the brink of the end of all of his dreams. There's nothing more cathartic about it. I mean, as Killian said, it theater is therapy. It's an amazing therapy, and to be able to play that and to ride that roller coaster every night and then reach that final layer is I don't think anyone who hasn't done it can really know how rewarding that is.
Lastly, when has it gone wrong? What's the biggest, okay, whoopsie doodle. I'm here up here phantoming my buns off, and now the mask went flying into the audience, or I fell through the trap door, Christine forgot her wig. What happened?
I mean, I have fallen through the trap door.
You have?
And it went but it didn't go all the way down. It just went halfway down.
Oh my God.
So I was absolutely fine. It just, but it went to my waist. So I was the waist. So all you could see was this Tajiri and Raoul. I'll be back.
A demi phantom. Half a phantom.
A demi phantom, yeah.
Yeah.
We, final layer, you know, Raoul's the portcullis and you say, be my guest, sir. And then you, you know, to go to lift the portcullis and it doesn't move. So, and I can hear from the stage manager desk that like cue portcullis. And so if it doesn't go, they have to turn off the machine, then turn it on again. So it restarts. And I just sat there straining to get the, I was like, I don't, you know, it's like, I have to stay, I'm trying to stay in the moment, just like pushing it. And then finally it happened, I'm like, yeah, it just was that, you know, and I didn't know what to do. So that was, that happened a couple times. And, you know, I don't know if Howard, if it did the same thing, but like the portcullis, it, when you lift for that part, it like goes up and then it goes like a little at the end. And so that's always, you know, I try and like mimic that movement. And then, so you, it's, it just doesn't go. And you're like, yeah, finally, like just trying to, no, this is how it goes. This is how it goes, audience. This is how it works. Don't worry.
Really put your back into it.
Yes.
I never set my hair on fire, but I did hear that one of the Phantoms actually did set his wig on fire with the torch at the end of the, at the, in the final layer.
I have done that a couple times.
Actually,
yes.
Lit his wig. Yep. Have you done it, Ben?
I actually have. You just remind, not huh? Late. We haven't had the actual, we haven't had the candle. We've been doing, where I grab the noose and like lift it to, like choke him. And then Christine tells me not to. And then that's like the heartbreak moment. But before, yeah, and we're just, I smelled burning. And then I got into the, I, you know, we finish and I'm in the throne and I like smell it and I come out and it burned through down to the bald cap. So it burned through the lace and the bald cap had gone through. Yeah. And it happened a couple times because those, you know, they just go poof and kind of go everywhere. And yeah. Yeah, one time I was actually like smacking my head. It happened twice. One time I was actually like smacking my head because I thought I was still on fire. So, you know, fun times.
My God. What for you, Howard, was in all the 2,500 some odd times?
Well, I don't know. You guys must have experienced this as well. The sometimes, well, originally, and I don't know, I'm, of course, I'm the old man in the sea, so this is a long time ago, that taxi signals, radio signals would actually interfere with the boat signal. Because the boat is run by a remote control. And sometimes a passing taxi's signal on the, you know, on the air would interfere and the boat would break down. And then the Phantom has to get out and walk on water and lift the front of the boat. And it's not an easy lift. I'm telling you that that thing is really heavy and you have to actually disengage it from the mechanism that drives it forward when it's actually engaged on a remote. And you have to then pull the boat through the water to get it to the proper place. That happened a couple of times. That was about as bad as it got, I think.
Oh, well, that's
in the final boat movement, in the final journey. It's a very quick journey. The boat comes down and goes off safe left. And it's very quick. But we lodged on a candle once, myself and my Christine, so we couldn't move. So I ad-libbed after the, Christine, why? Why? Get off!
That is awesome.
Get out.
You've got to keep still going. She's got to get out.
Yes. Get off the stage. Because I don't know how to move the boat, so I just went, get off.
Hilarious.
We actually did, Aaron LaCroix and I, who is one of the Christine alternates, she and I did that scene once without the boat. And they were like, the boat's not working. And it was like, okay. And they're like, just stay in the middle. Don't fall in the coals where the candles come out. So we did this scene walking down where I just had her arm and I was like, you know, and then we just walked off stage left. We haven't had it lately, but we have had the boat come down. And then as it's traversing across the front of the stage, that front wheel comes off the stage and the boat's heavy enough. It's not going to like fall into the pit or anything, but we just do music of the night with the boat sitting down. Downstage, right? And we finish, and then the lights go out, and you're like, you know, and they're putting it back into place where it's supposed to end. But yeah, you know, the Joy of Life Theater. Our stage manager came out recently during the journey and stopped the show. He just like walked out, and it was me and Julia Udine. And I was like, who's that? And he was like, we're just going to get out of the boat and we're going to stop the show. And I was like, oh, okay. And so like, we just kind of hopped out and went off stage, and they brought the curtain down and they had to fix automation, but you know, the joy of live theater. So you just keep going.
I mean, those
joy
are
of live theater and nothing. And I think you will agree with me. Nothing will make you look like such a wimpy phantom when you've got your boat, you've got your candles, but in that mirror, if you don't pull that cloth off that mirror and it gets tangled in the mirror, and you just look like the weakest phantom ever. You're like going, music of the night. Forget it.
You see what I'm trying to do here.
Yes, she's, there's a pride behind that thing. Bride. That was a big reveal.
Pay no faint. Attention to what I just did. Now.
It should make you want to faint.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I can't keep you any longer. I would love to, because quite frankly, I would love to do an entire episode about the skincare regimen, but we just don't have the time. This has been such a treat for me, and I'm sure for everybody listening. Thank you for giving us your time and your insight.
Yeah, pleasure.
And I
a complete honor to talk to you both, to talk
ditto,
to you as well.
Ditto. Yeah, right
same
back
for you
at
guys.
You.
It's a real pleasure.
It's the Phantom Club that no one knows what it's like, but these sorts of gentlemen. All right. With my huge thanks once more, I hope to see you all soon and continued success in your careers. We'll be watching and loving and thrilling and fainting.
Thank you so
Ben.
Much.
Thanks, right. Ben.
Thank you, guys.
Bye for now, gents. Thank you.
Bye
everyone.
It's over now, the music of the night. That was so cool. I feel like I'm 14 years old again. That show will always have such a special place in my heart. I want to say thank you so much to Howard, Killian, and Ben for joining us. Make sure that you subscribe to us. Never miss an episode. Rate and review. Tell all your friends about us. And if you would like to support us further, you can do so on Patreon. Click the link in the liner notes, and you're going to get exclusive content made only for our Patreon family. Can't wait to see you all out there in podcast land on our next episode. For now, I'm your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, saying have a great show.